Welcome to the Hockey Writers Podcast, where your favorite THW contributors discuss the hottest topics around the NHL and hockey world every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Listen on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts, and check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com. I'm your host, Kyle Knopp, and today I'm joined by Austin Stanovich, who represents the Los Angeles Kings, and Jacob Strozik, who writes for the Buffalo Sabres. Austin, Jacob, how are you guys doing today?
Doing good, Kyle. Can't wait to get into some hockey conversation.
Excellent.
I'm Jacob, loving it. I'm ready to go. Let's talk some hockey, boys.
All right. Well, let's jump right into it, boys. Well, today, Wednesday, assuming that no deal is made between when we are recording this on Tuesday night and when this releases on Wednesday morning, which by now I doubt anything will, but Jesper Bratt is going to have his arbitration hearing with the New Jersey Devils. So Bratt came in asking around $6.5 million a year, and the Devils were only offering $4.15 million. So assuming that a midpoint is reached somewhere around the $5 million mark, do you think New Jersey shot themselves in the foot for future negotiations? And Austin, I want to start with you. Do you think the Devils undervalued Jesper Bratt too much to tarnish a future with this team?
100%. I think this is a terrible mistake from New Jersey. I mean, we know arbitration hearings almost always destroy player and team relations, sometimes to the point where the player wants out. And I just don't, when I saw that that Bratt's asking point was $6.5 million, I was shocked that New Jersey was taking this to arbitration. And I get that they have to lowball when going to these hearings and stuff, but if I saw $4.5 million on the table and I was just for Bratt, I'd feel like I just got slapped in the face by him. I mean, I don't understand where New Jersey's going with this. I know people want to say, well, this is his first, you know, big year for him. He's only scored, you know, his best year is 35 points his rookie year, but he scored at a 50-point pace twice in 18-19 and 2021. He just didn't get a full season in. And this isn't a guy that, you know, out of nowhere just blew up. This is a guy who's been producing pretty well, who's been getting better, who's played on a terrible Devils team almost his entire career. The only year they made the playoffs was his rookie year when Taylor Hall just completely took over the league. So I don't get where the fear of a regression is from this guy. I mean, the team around him is going to keep getting better. There's no reason to think at 24 now he won't keep getting better. I do not understand New Jersey's stance on this. It doesn't make sense to me. I compare it when I saw this, I compared it to a guy in LA, and Adrian Kempe, who also just had a huge season a couple years older and got $5.5 million for 5 years. I would pay Jesper Bratt $1 million more than Adrian Kempe all day. This is crazy to me from New Jersey.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree in that sense that I think the Kempe comparison is really good between these two players, both around the same age, both similar types of players. And that's a great call out there. So, yeah, I think the Devils certainly offered him as well. So, Jacob, I want to get your thoughts on this. Looking at this mid-ground point, the Devils only offering $1.5 million to Jesper Bratt. Do you think they shot themselves in the foot moving forward with any negotiations?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. When you're looking to sign a player like that, especially one that has such a great breakout year, that's not the kind of player that you want to alienate or take away. That's somebody that you want to try and build around, somebody that you want to commit to your core. He's shown that he has chemistry with the other players. He's shown that he's productive, even if he's not going to be up to the pace that he was the past season, which was absolutely fantastic. Even if he's anywhere close to that, he's worth well more than $4.5 million as he sits. And to make a comparison to somebody from the Sabres when it happened, the Sabres made the mistake with Sam Reinhart multiple times to just keep giving him smaller bridge contracts and just underpaying him and undervaluing him for what he was. And at the end of the day, he wanted out and they traded him away because they didn't have anything left to give him. Like it's just such a similar situation, and it breaks my heart for the Devils to do something like that when they have so much promise and so much young talent and so much potential coming up. He's so young. He's under 25. He has a lot of great hockey left to play. So if you want to lock him up long-term, you're killing yourself here if you're trying to lowball him into, you know, a long-term deal at a low number. Give him a good median number. If he's asking 6.5 and you're at 4.5, settle at 5.5 or settle at 5.8 and sit yourself somewhere around there. 5.8, 5.5, even 5.2 if he's willing to take more towards the low end. Something along those lines is an absolute bargain for a player that's going to throw up 60 to 65 points for you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the Devils' offer was just way too low. And from what I was seeing on Pro Hockey Rumors, where they broke down the arbitration, the team actually came in at 4.15, which is, yeah, like, so the separation is more than $2 million between the two, the player and the team at the time. But I think you're right. I think, and like Austin said, he's a Kempe type player who just got $5.5 million over 5 years, I believe. Why not offer the same to Jesper Bratt? And they have the cap space. So I kind of want to ask your thoughts on this. And Jacob, I'll come right back to you first. Do you think Bratt was overvaluing himself in terms of maybe the Devils did ask him about somewhere in the $5 million range after they initially came to the 4.15? I don't know for sure because the arbitration was set at the 4.15. So we don't know if there was another negotiation in there or not. But if they had, let's speculate here. Let's say New Jersey came back to him around 5.5, but Bratt and his agent were stuck on the 6.5 million number. Was Bratt overvaluing himself, and did that tarnish anything? You know, we already know that Bratt's probably going to want to leave, but do you think maybe he had a hand in making these negotiations worse?
So if he's hard set on that number and he's not willing to negotiate whatsoever, then I mean, yeah, he's not really helping the fix the problem whatsoever. But there's a difference between sitting at the negotiating table and willing to move on a number because, you know, you're trying to work out a deal because you want to be there or because you know what you're worth. He seems to know what he's worth. And he seems to say, yeah, I'm this good of a player. I can produce this much. And on the team that we're going to be, I'm worth $6.5 million. Mm-hmm. I could be worth more, but if you want to keep me here for an extended period of time, you pay me now, I'll commit. You commit, and we're going to have a great, happy time, and we're going to win a lot of games. That seems to be the mentality that he's going for, and that's why he's hard-nosing for that number. That's what my mentality would be if I were him, and that seems to be what the play is based off of how he's acting.
Excellent. Excellent point of view. Excellent observation. Thank you, Jacob. Austin, same question to you. Is Bratt overvaluing himself? He had 73 points in 76 games last year, 203 points in 307 games played in his career. Asking for $6.5 million after we both, or all three of us, kind of said his value might have been closer to the $5.5 million range. Do you think he kind of had a hand in these souring negotiations?
I think $6.5 million was honestly a fair ask from him. I was just looking it up. He was 23 for all of last season amongst guys 23 and younger. He was sixth in the league in points, outscoring guys like Andrei Svechnikov, Elias Pettersson, Brady Tkachuk. Some guys are making a lot more than $6.5 million. So I see where he's coming from asking for that amount. And like I said, this isn't a guy who you should fear regression from. None of his stats look like they're going to dip. He's not someone who had a really inflated shooting percentage or anything that would scare you off. So I don't think he overvalued himself at all. I would assume he wanted like a kind of smaller term. Mm-hmm. And that maybe was part of what they didn't like, you know, like he probably wanted more of a bridge deal because he's thinking if I'm a point per game player long term, I don't want $6.5 million. So I don't want that for 2 years. And maybe New Jersey said, no, you know, if you're going to get $6.5 million, it's going to be long term. And maybe that's where the disagreement comes in. I don't know, but I don't think money-wise he's overvaluing himself at all.
That's a good point as well. I think when you do look at all the, you know, comparisons that are out there that he brings to New Jersey, the type of team New Jersey has been the last couple of years while he's been there, and how he has been producing against players of the same age and caliber, you're absolutely right. He 6.5 is probably on the conservative side of his value. And I think, you know, the fact that the Devils are only coming in at 4.15, that's an extremely low ball. And I think that's why these soured right away. So I appreciate both of your observations and point of views on this. One thing before we move on, and one of our other Devils contributors, Christy Flannery, and one of my morning skate contributors and good friend, she sent this over to Matthew and I today when we had talked about the Jesper Bratt situation. And this is a quote from Bobby Holik on salary arbitration. And he said, quote, "The number is just a number, but the arbitration process itself has changed the way I look at a lot of things. I've learned how they look at me. Every player should go through it and find out that this is a business and nothing else. They make you look like you're not worth as much as you think. Some people would take it personally. I don't take it personally. They just treat it as a business." So, I mean, that's one way to look at it. You know, there's much more to that quote that goes on where he says he'll get him back by doing that as an unrestricted free agent. But this is a business, and sometimes you have to look at it and take your glasses from a fan's point of view off and look at it from a business point of view. And the Devils want to keep this core together as long as they can. And one way they can do that is by getting a cheap value out of Bratt in the upcoming seasons. But I think they unfortunately approached it the wrong way, and we will eventually see what happens, but this could really sour the relationship between Jesper Bratt and the New Jersey Devils. So do you either of you have any final thoughts on this before we move on?
No, I'm good.
All right. So moving on away from free agency, because we've been doing a lot of speculation in free agency. So let's talk about some actual hockey that's coming up. And Austin, you've been a big part of the World Junior rosters as they have been released throughout the Hockey Writers website. And yesterday, Canada released its World Junior roster. So I just want to get your thoughts, and Austin, I'm coming right to you. Are you surprised by some of the changes that were made from the tournament that was initially supposed to take place in December and eventually cut short? Specifically, players like Shane Wright, Owen Power, Cole Perforetti, and Jake Neighbors, among others, that will no longer be in the lineup.
I don't know if I'd say I'm surprised, just because I'm of the assumption that those guys aren't going to get ready for the NHL season. And I think that's just kind of a fallout of it having to be moved to August. I mean, we see Slovakia is probably getting hit the hardest with Slavkovsky and Nimic both not going for that reason. So surprise maybe isn't the word I'd use for it, but a little disappointed, honestly, that we don't get to see those guys, especially I really wanted to see Shane Wright. I think if Shane Wright would have played, he would have just ran rampant on this tournament, because we know he has that chip on his shoulder. So a little disappointed. I don't, unless it comes out that these guys were snub and it wasn't the NHL reason, I'm not really surprised.
Yeah, I doubt it will be anything coming out that these players were snubbed and it was more their choice or their team talking to them's choice about coming into the camp fully prepared to make the NHL roster or else they would be there. But that's a good call out. So, Jacob, coming over to you, Canada releasing its World Junior roster without Shane Wright, Owen Power, and a few others. What are your thoughts on this new roster? And are you surprised, or as Austin put it, are you disappointed that some of these players will not be partaking?
I mean, like I said, I'm not 100% surprised. I am a little bit disappointed. Some of the, you know, higher end players like Power, especially as a Sabres fan, I would love to have seen him, you know, kind of dominate that tournament, especially how well he was doing when the Olympics were going on and everything else that was happening last year. So I know that based off of his track record alone, he loves to win. He likes to win tournaments. He's a very competitive person, and he's the kind of guy that likes to get involved in as much hockey as possible. So to me, even though I understand that, you know, maybe the team would say, hey, we want you ready for training camp. Hey, we want you ready for, you know, the NHL season, what better way to prepare for the NHL season than an ultra competitive tournament where he can win a World Junior Championship? He's the kind of guy that likes to challenge for something like that. So I'm a little bit surprised that he didn't push back enough to get, you know, his way on if, you know, he was originally selected and then said no. So I'm a little bit shocked that Power in particular isn't on that roster, because it's just the type of person that he is. As far as some of the other ones, if the logic behind it is all of these other players aren't, you know, aren't going to the tournament because they're prepping for the NHL roster, why is McTavish still on there? Isn't he, you know, going to be pushing for a spot with the Ducks? Like, not every single player going is, or not every single player that isn't going anymore is a shoe-in for the NHL roster. So wouldn't it have been maybe a better idea to go to the tournament as their kind of preseason per se? That's my thought of it.
Yeah, I mean, you do bring up a good point. There are some players on this roster that very much have a chance of making their NHL team. Mason McTavish, I would say, is probably the one that jumps out the most. But you have, you know, players like Logan Stankoven, who could surprise Donovan Cerebrango, who was performing really well at the Red Wings prospect camp earlier this offseason. So, you know,
Johnson.
Another Ken one. Johnson, absolutely. He actually played with Columbus.
And he played with Columbus last year. So
you're absolutely right. There are players that are, you know, certainly NHL caliber that could be making teams or making push for teams that are that are still on this roster when some of these other players are not. But you bring up a good point also about the competitiveness. Maybe to him, a World Junior Championship is not really that big on his list compared to a full-time NHL spot or, you know, something else that he might be thinking of. But, you know, it's hard to say without being able to talk to him. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. As someone that is competitive and likes to represent your country, you would think that you would want to go to these types of tournaments before you go to a camp, because you're going to be in shape even more after coming off one of these tournaments, going to a camp. All right. I do want to get your thoughts from both of you before we move on from the camp roster, but who are you most looking forward to watching at the World Juniors from Team Canada? And I'll start with you, Jacob.
Oh, well, I'm a huge draft nut and I'm super excited for the 2023 draft. So I got all eyes on Connor Bedard. My God, is that kid talented? My God, is he super fun to watch? If you watched any of his highlights from last year, especially during World Juniors, oh my God, it is some of the most impressive hockey you'll ever see. So if you haven't heard the name Connor Bedard, if you haven't seen him by some miracle up to this point, you are in for an absolute show as soon as you watch him.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, he started off the tournament in December before it was postponed and then canceled with a 4-goal performance. Excuse me, when he was only 16 years old at the time, you know, granted it was against Austria, but still, he was only the sixth player to ever score 4 goals in a World Junior game. So that's very, very good call out. I've been a big fan of watching Connor Bedard since he was granted exceptional status into the WHL. So I'm very much looking forward to watching him as well. Austin, over to you. Who are you most looking forward to watch off of this Team Canada roster?
Yeah, I mean, obviously Connor Bedard's got to be the first name on anyone's list. That kid's just unbelievable. There's potential there for him to be a generational type talent, but not just keep banging the drum on him. We mentioned Mason McTavish. I think he's going to have a big tournament. He's a stud, frankly. Kent Johnson's just an electric player who's fun to watch, but I'm really excited to see one of the guys that came in to replace some of the guys that didn't make it, Nathan Gauthier. Mm-hmm. I think I really, really was impressed with him at the back end of the QMJHL season last year. He's just a big, mean kid at 18 already. I think there's a lot more offense than people give him credit for. I think he could score quite a few goals in this tournament. I think he's really going to pop this year.
Yeah, he's a really big boy too. He's 6'3", 207.
He knows how to use it.
Yeah, big power forward. I think you're absolutely right. He's a fun player to watch too. I like the others that you threw out there. I mean, you know, we were just kind of talking about him. Kent Johnson, the only one to play in the NHL off of this roster last year. And then Mason Tavich, who was having a good tournament in December before it was cut short. So again, two names to watch out for. Two names that I am looking out for as a Detroit Red Wings fan and host of the Grind Line, but are Sebastian Cosa, who I thought had kind of a subpar development tournament when they played their 3-on-3 tournament the Detroit Red Wings did with their prospects and draftees. And I thought he was one of the worser of the goalies that were on the ice in that. So I'd really like to see how he'll respond because he's a big part of the Red Wings rebuild coming up. And then, like I said earlier, Donovan Sabrango, he played in the AHL last year. You know, he's kind of one of those guys along with Kent Johnson who should be showing their experience of playing against men in this tournament by kind of dominating these other under 20 players. So those are a few names I'm looking out for on the Canadian side. But again, my eyes are going to be glued to Connor Bedard. He's just phenomenal, and I'm so excited to watch him play. So and Mitch Koff as well from Russia. Or no, they're not playing in this, are they? So
no mind. Russia.
Never mind. We're getting robbed of that. I forgot about that. All right.
Fact about the Bedard, yeah, before you change the topic. I looked up the roster again and I was looking over the names. If I checked all this correctly, Bedard is the only player on the Team Canada roster that is from the 2023 draft. All players on it otherwise are from 2020, 2021, and 2022.
Yep.
He's the youngest player on the team, and he is going to be the most dominant player on the ice. That is just nuts.
And the funny thing is, he's been one of the most dominant players since he was, 15. Coming up. Yeah. Like
even 14, honestly,
in the leagues before then. Yeah. Like the fact that he has just been continuously producing and living up to the hype every single time has been phenomenal and so much fun to witness. So it's very exciting. Sorry. No, you're good. You're good.
I do have one bone to pick with this roster, and I'm going to throw my Kings bias in here. How do Canada didn't right their wrong from December and put Brent Clark on this team when
two guys did drop out? I agree. That is an absolute crime. Brent Clark deserves a spot.
He's so good.
Oh, my God. He's so good. Yeah.
And in December, it was a decision where everyone was like, this is questionable, if not downright dumb. And they got a golden opportunity to correct it. He was one of, if not the best defenseman in the OHL. And they have one righty on the roster, so they needed someone of his profile. And they just snubbed him again. I know there's been rumors that there's, some off-ice reasons for that they don't like him for whatever reason, or I don't know what it is. I don't want to speculate on that, but it's just baffling. Yeah. I mean, and I know people said, oh, they want the O2s. They want to give the O2s a chance. If you're not taking the best players at this tournament, what are you even doing? I mean, that's such a baffling decision to me. I couldn't believe it.
And another thing that kind of goes along with that is, they're not always getting the best players because usually it's in December in the middle of the season. And now with it being in August, like they absolutely should go out and get all of the best players. But whatever reason, quite a few of them are remaining away from the tournament. Some, like you brought up, are missing out by being snubbed, while others that we brought up earlier might be holding back in terms of just trying to get a better, healthier advance on the NHL camp. So yeah, it's unfortunate that we're not getting a best on best tournament, because it feels like it's been quite a while since we've been able to have one. But either way, this should be a lot of fun. And we get hockey in August, so I can't really complain too much, I guess. Any other thoughts on Team Canada's roster?
No, all right. Just need to get that out of the way.
I love all the insight, though, so thank you. All right, well, let's move over to the tournament as a whole then. So in Group A, we have Slovakia, Canada, Finland, Czechia, and Latvia. And in Group B, we have the United States, Sweden, Switzerland, Germany, and Austria. Which team out of these two groups are you expecting to have the biggest tournaments? And what are your expectations of this tournament as a whole? And Austin, I'm going to come to you first.
So the team at the top for me right now, I really like to look at this Sweden team, mainly because I think they're built really well for a tournament with Jesper Wallstedt in net, who's going to be the best goalie there, in my opinion. And then a decor anchored by Simon Edvinson, Helga Granz, and William Wallander, who I think is maybe the best three in that tournament. USA might have something to say about that, but I really would probably take that Sweden three over anyone else. And then William Eklund getting added to that team is massive for their forward group. Add in guys like Fabian Lysell, Isaac Rosen, Lakara Mackey. I think there's more than enough offense there and a whole defensive unit, including Wallstedt there, that's going to be damn near impossible to score on and makes it really dangerous. And then just out of Finland, I'm really excited to see Brad Lambert and Joakim Kamel both come into this tournament, having been kind of snubbed by a lot of teams, and especially Lambert fell really hard and looked really good in December. I think those two guys for Finland are going to have huge tournaments with a chip on their shoulder.
Yeah, you also wrote the article over at the Hockey Writers on Finland and their preview. So I'm sure you are very excited to kind of watch them after kind of covering them and getting ready for this tournament. But I'm absolutely on board with keeping an eye on Brad Lambert. You know, he kind of dropped further in the draft than a lot of people expected. And so I'm excited to kind of see what he does at the international stage. And then I have to agree, for, you know, right now, Team Sweden looks to be probably the best team coming into this tournament. And with you naming off those defensemen and me being a Red Wings fan, it just got me super excited. So really, really looking forward to that Team Sweden as well. Jacob, over to you. Who are you most excited to watch at this World Junior Tournament? Which team do you think will produce, and what are your overall expectations?
Stealing my thunder with the Team Sweden thing. I had it right in the back pocket the entire time. God, I love so many of the Swedish players. Back in last year's draft, even though Buffalo took power at one, I was sitting there on my screen going, you know, I wouldn't be mad if they took Eklund at one. Love him. Love everything about him. So I was super excited to see that he was added to the roster there too. I love Wallstedt as a goaltender. I think he is just absolutely massive, and he's just so sound as a goaltender. He's going to give so many scoring players a challenge that they're going to have to beat him almost individually. It's going to be nuts what he's able to do. So on top of whatever their defensive core is able to give him as far as support goes, you mentioned Edvinson. He is an amazing prospect for the Red Wings, so he's going to be an incredible support. I am absolutely in love with the Swedish team. I'll give an honorable mention to the American team, because while I look at the roster, I love the amount of speed that's going up and down the lineup with the USA team. And that's just fun to watch for me. I love watching a hockey team that can just go north, south the entire way and just trade chances. That's fun hockey to me. So USA, I'd say, is like my honorable mention for like a fun team to watch. I'm not sure how great they're going to do comparatively to like Canada and Sweden, and Finland's going to be really good too, now that I think about it. But I'd say USA still might be competitive, and they're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the USA is going to be very fast, which is, you know, kind of always fun, because these types of games, you can throw off the defense. They're still kids, right? They're still under 20. Mm-hmm. So if you pressure them, if you, you know, go after them with, you know, if you're aggressive, you can often make them make mistakes. So they're still not quite sound. So when you come at a team like that with speed, you can often put them on their heels and then mm-hmm. dictate the play and really, you know, force issue in the offensive zone. And so it'll be a lot of fun to see teams like that operate. And you're absolutely right. This Team USA looks very fast this year. And not only that, but their defense moves the puck and starts to play from the back end quite a bit. So you're almost having, you know, four attackers coming at you every single rush. So that is fun. I like that shout out for Team USA. They are fun. Should be fun at least to watch. And then, so my big thing that I'm going to be looking at, and again, I've mentioned this a few times, you know, I like to watch the teams or the players that the Red Wings draft, but I also like to watch those players that they didn't draft. So, you know, Austin, you said it with Jesper Wallstedt. I think he's going to be the best goalie at this tournament. And I was one of those guys that was super surprised. Yzerman traded up to take Sebastian Kosa when Wallstedt was still on the board. I thought for sure they were trading up to take Sebastian Jesper Wallstedt. And so I'm going to have my eye on him to see how he does compared to how well Sebastian Kosa does, because they're both going to be playing in this tournament. And I think it could come down to those two teams in the gold medal game. So that's kind of the big thing I'm watching play out over the course of the tournament. So any other thoughts on the World Junior? Are there any players you'd like to shout out that you are expected to have a big tournament, or players that maybe some of our listeners might not be familiar with that they should certainly keep an eye on?
Yeah, I was going to say, on your point about some of the younger defensemen, especially if you really attack them aggressively, you can kind of put them back on their heels and take advantage of them. Because of that, I think Matthew Knies for USA is going to have a monster tournament. I mean, I think he could be up near the top of the leaderboards for goals in this tournament because he's so big, so fast. He's going to be a lot to handle, especially if you're a team. You know, I like that Finland team. They're pretty small on the back end. I mean, if he gets ahead of steam coming up against even their good defense, like Niemela, who's really good, it doesn't matter how good you are, that kid's going through you. And I think he's going to have a big tournament for that same reason. Mace McTavish, who's a physical freak, going to have a good tournament. Gauthier, who I mentioned, like those kinds of guys, I think really have an advantage in these kinds of tournaments where being physically dominant can take you so far in them, and then add on really skilled players with those physical tools, and they're going to be hard to stop.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good call out there, Austin. How about you, Jacob? Any other thoughts?
I mean, not to harp on the Canada thing, but man, just watch Bedard. It's going to be the Connor Bedard show. I don't mean to continue to fanboy over it, but think McDavid, but smaller.
Yeah.
And it's the best comparison I can make, and he's a better goal. Yeah, exactly. He's a better goal scorer.
The kid's shot is just so quick and clean. It's insane how fast he can get that puck off his stick and pick the smallest of corners, it seems. So, absolutely. I hope he dominates, because when he does, man, is he so much fun to watch. So much fun.
It's going to be crazy.
All right. Well, let's move into our articles of the day section, and I will kick things off. My article today is by Stephen Ground, and it is three former Blues who are all Hall of Fame worthy. Stephen does a great job of laying out the case for these three former St. Louis Blues players and why they should reach the NHL Hall of Fame. His first choice is Pierre Turgeon, who had a very good career with the Buffalo Sabres, the New York Islanders, the Montreal Canadiens, and the St. Louis Blues. So he had a lot of games throughout his career, but in St. Louis, he played 327 games and recorded 355 points. And so he was a big part of that St. Louis franchise and certainly has, scored plenty of goals and points throughout his career. So he's definitely one of the guys that should deserve that honor. Another is no no stranger to Blues fans and now NHL fans, and that is Keith Tkachuk, and that's mostly because of his sons. But Keith Tkachuk had a great career across multiple different teams, including the St. Louis Blues. And although he did not win a cup like Turgeon in St. Louis, he certainly should be considered a Hall of Fame candidate. And then the third one is Jay Bouwmeester. And Steven does a great job of laying out that, you know, why Bouwmeester, who is a defensive defenseman and doesn't quite carry the statistics, but what he was able to bring off the ice to the club on their Stanley Cup run and why he deserves to also be in the Hall of Fame. So make sure you check that out. Even if you aren't a Blues fan, Steven does a great job of laying out why these players deserve the ultimate enshrinement in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And again, that is three former Blues who are Hall of Fame worthy by Steven Ground. Jacob, coming over to you, who is your, or what is your article of the day and who is it by?
Yeah, so I have the three most probable teams to sign PK Subban. That's by Colton Pankow. Is it Pankow? I'm not really sure how to pronounce
it. Pankow, I think.
Is it Pankow?
I think
it's,
so.
It's IW, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah. I think I always have to ask him whenever he's on the show, and I should know this, but I'm pretty sure.
Well, Colton, I'm sorry for mispronouncing your name. Everybody does it to me, and now I feel bad. but yeah, so he has three most probable teams to sign PK Subban, and it interested me because I was thinking about talking about it as a potential idea for somebody that the Sabres could, you know, try and sign for their current decor. And he actually goes into Sabres as one of the options. The first team he actually talks about is the Nashville Predators, saying that Subban had some of his best years while he was in Nashville. He had a Norris Trophy nomination while he was there. Mm-hmm. So maybe a little bit of a former team reunion would do well for, you know, the tail end of his career. He's 33 years old. So he's kind of winding down as far as his, you know, offensive numbers are concerned, as far as his, you know, prominence within the league is concerned. But he kind of breaks down the different options that he could, you know, or the different roles that he could fill within that roster, saying that he could be a, you know, second power play unit defenseman, kind of fill in the top four if needed, and then kind of sit back in the bottom pair, generally just to kind of round out the defense. He has a similar idea when he goes down to the second team when he talks about Edmonton. He recognizes that the Oilers are a little bit cap-strapped, but since they have some, you know, long-term IR contracts for Klefbom and Mike Smith, that they'll have the ability to, you know, push some money aside and be able to get him signed possibly and, you know, get him to round out the bottom end of that defense corps. And then he goes on to talk about Buffalo and says that, you know, the Sabres have a lot of young players, especially on their decor. Their primary defensemen are Joki Haru, Dahlin, Power. All of them are under the age of 25. Having maybe, you know, that veteran leadership, he is still a very good player. He has a great offensive mind to him. He's still relatively defensively sound, and he knows what it takes to be a part of some playoff teams. So having that influence is what he was talking about and saying that that could be something great for the development of the Sabres young defenseman. He says Subban might not want to go there for the sake of, you know, maybe he wants to win right now and Buffalo's not really in the position to do that. But if he's willing to take a shorter term deal, he'd be able to influence them and maybe some magic will happen in the process.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And one thing that stood out to me in this article, and I think he lays out the case for the Buffalo Sabres really well as Nashville. But I think the one that stuck out the most to me was kind of the Edmonton Oilers. And if they can make a move, because they are over cap space, like you said, that will change once they put those players on long-term IR. But Tyson Barrie being kind of on his way out, would give Oilers room. And, you know, honestly, PK Subban would be a better replacement for Tyson Barrie and Duncan Keith on that second power play and third defensive pairing than the Oilers had this past year. So that one kind of jumped out to me a lot as, you know, something that Ken Holland should really explore. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what kind of deal PK Subban gets. But right now, I think you're right. He's probably going to need to take a short-term deal if he wants to play this season. So we'll see where that goes. All right, Austin, heading over to you. What is your article of the day?
My article of the day is Senators 2022-23 lineup boosted by summer arrivals by Luke James. It's an article where he talks about just what the Senators did this summer and how it improves their team. Great article by Luke, but I picked it because I don't think you can talk enough about how good of an offseason the Senators had. He goes into Cam Talbot replacing Matt Murray. Big part of it talks about Jake Sanderson, which I love Jake Sanderson. So I love anytime he gets a big shout out. I think he's an incredible young defenseman. I think he's going to have a big year, and then moves into the obvious big moves they made in their top six, getting DeBrincat and Claude Giroux, kind of how that improves their team, makes them a lot more dangerous. We can all mess with Leafs fans and say they have the better top six now, get them all angry. But I mean, I just really like pointing out how good Ottawa did this offseason. I think they're a team that could jump into the playoff picture if Boston falls away with their injuries and everything. So that was the article I went with.
Yeah, I think this is a great article, and shout out to Luke for having two articles highlighted this week as being our articles of the day. I did his article on the Adidas deal on Monday. But I love what he did here, where he compared the lineups that they had from last season to the projected lineups for this season. You know, notably their defense, you know, the top pairing stays the same, but the Senators did a great job of bolstering their second pairing with Brännström and Hamonic, and then also having Sanderson coming up on that third period while dropping Zadisov down. So I think that's going to be great for the back end. And then, yeah, you said that top six of Tkachuk, Norris, Batherson, and DeBrincat, Stützle, Giroux is insane. That's got to be one of the most exciting top six in, you know, at least in the division, if not the Eastern Conference this year. That's going to be a fun top six to keep an eye on. So great shout out for this article. I honestly can't say it enough either, Austin. I think Ottawa was probably the most improved this offseason, and they're going to be quite the sleeper on, you know, some teams this year, I believe.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you both. That is going to wrap up today's edition of the Hockey Writers Podcast. So thank you for listening to this episode. Listen to new episodes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on iHeartRadio and wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure to check out our other great content at thehockeywriters.com and our team channels over on YouTube. Also, don't forget to sign up for our morning newsletter at morningskate.io and follow the Hockey Writers on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. From Kyle Knopp, Austin Stanovich, and Jacob Storzik, this has been the Hockey Writers Podcast.